Mr. Hipperson, Reel 8. Now we're talking about, well, it'd be into the 30th of May now, next morning. Early morning. When you got back to the front line and were taken to hospital. I ought to ask, about what time would you say it was you got back to the front line?
It's difficult to say. I would have thought about 3 or 4 in the morning, something like that.
Now, what happened when you got to the field hospital?
I remember getting to this hospital and laying on this bed, and this guy coming along with a big pair of scissors and cutting all my clothes off with the scissors, throwing them in the incinerator, and American nurse came along, and I thought, God, this is the first female I've seen for about 4 months. By the way, she bet she weighed 30 stone. She was like something out of a cartoon character, and I sort of laid there, and more or less, probably naked. And she sort of walked up to me, and I'm a bit hairy, and she say, "Shave this man, he's full of ice." anyway, they operated then on the leg. They took an x-ray, and there was a couple of bullets had entered the calf through the muscle, beside the muscle, just there.
So about 4 inches below the right knee.
And
the right-hand side.
That's right, yeah. And they just lodged against the tibia and the fibula.
They'd not broken the bone.
Not broken the bone. I wonder if they were ricochets, because they didn't have a, you know, I was a bit lucky, I think. And I said, we'll have to take them out and remove them. So I obviously had an anaesthetic, and but then it was only then, so you know, so about 8, 9 o'clock in the morning, I believe, and they removed they obviously removed them, and I know I slept all that day and all the night till the next morning.
Now, so you weren't aware, therefore, of all that was going on, obviously, behind you.
No idea whatsoever.
But I mean, yeah. You didn't know what was happening at all.
No.
And you never found out until, well, you got back to England many years later, presumably.
Well, some time later. But so I was in this hospital. I know I woke up the next morning, the next morning, I was starving. The American thing, and they brought us beautiful breakfast round. Oh, it went whoomph, and it was gone. And the guy who was in bed next to me was an officer, I think, and an American. And he said, "Man, you're hungry." I said, "Well, I didn't have anything for about 3 days." He said, "Do you want another breakfast, boy?" I said, "Yeah." So he called, "Orderly, bring this man another breakfast." So probably another breakfast, and I ate that. But that was there a couple of days, and they put us on a train.
Now, where was this hospital? Do you know the name of it, or where
it
was?
I don't know where the name
was. It was American.
It was an American field thing. Just that program, that American television program, MASH, that is that type of hospital. That was a tented hospital. They were carrying out operations. I did remember the short time I was in there, people coming in with legs blown off and screaming and shouting. That's a horrendous place, really.
They'd fix your leg. What about your... Well, fixed. They'd operate
They did my leg. But then, I suppose my face... I looked in the mirror and I looked around, I got a little blackhead on my face. And my eye looked fine. So it wasn't bloodshot or anything. But I knew I had something in my eye because I could see these black dots. Well, they moved me back and I finished up in the British Hospital in Pusan.
Was the journey all right?
Yeah, that was okay. We were on a train, I remember that. On the stretches. On a hospital train. I went to Seoul. Hospital in Seoul, a British hospital. No, I went to American hospital at first in Seoul, and then they moved me to a British one. And we were in an old school. God, that's dreadful. That's right, we were on laying camp beds. The three poly asses on the camp bed, and all day long they separated. You were fighting the poly asses all day long. And we were in there, and then they said, well, your leg is getting on fine. You ain't get up now. And I said, well, I don't get any uniform, I don't get any clothes, I don't get anything. Which I didn't have, I would pay a pyjamas, what the Yanks had given me. And then I said, well, what about my eye? So I said, well, I don't know. The doctor said, well, he sort of had a look at it. And he said, well, I said, well, there's something in it. I said, I only see two or three black spots, and that sight is getting worse each day. And that looked okay, you see, from the outside. And so he said, well, and then he went off, and about an hour later I got a message that I would be going to, on the plane, to the Commonwealth Brigade Hospital in Koori, Japan that night, as an outpatient. And cause I remember saying, well, I don't get any clothes. And they said, well, we ain't got any. And I scrounged around the ward, managed to get a pair of trousers and a jacket and a pair of boots and a shirt, all for different people who was in bed. Because I had a Canadian jacket, which was almost green, and another pair of trousers and a hat. And got on the plane and went to, they took me to Koori. Well, I went in the Commonwealth Brigade Hospital in Koori. And they put me in a, there again. They said, well, your leg is nearly better. I think you can rejoin your unit. And I said, what about me? Oh, that's what I come here for. Oh, I better let you see the eye specialist. So I went into that, took me into the eye ward. The eye specialist looked at it and he said, I've got to operate on that tomorrow in the morning. Go, oh, yeah, okay, you're coming in this ward. And he says, yeah, there's definitely, you got a piece of shrapnel in your eye. We'll have to remove them. I'm worried about infection. So we operated the next morning. And in them days, when they did an eye operation, you used to be in bed for about a fortnight. You weren't allowed to do anything. And my eyes were bandaged. Both eyes bandaged up. I weren't expecting it. I know, they said, I thought, like, I'll try to pull these bandages off. When I was coming out of the anaesthetic, I took about three of them to hold me down. And, but I can't remember any of that, but I know I was nearly a fortnight, both my eyes bandaged, just laying flat on the bed. And then they let me get up and go to the toilet, which was a luxury in itself. As soon as he said, oh, you go, I said to the Australian in the bed next to me, can you take me to the toilet? And he said, yeah, I'll take it. So he took me out the ward and round the corner, and he said, yeah, here's a wall in front of you. And I stood there having a pee, and this Australian nurse came up, what the hell are you doing there? I said, what do you mean? I'm in the toilet, and I'm in the corridor. It's how he let me in the top, I was in the toilet.
A practical joke.
Yeah. They did all sorts of things to me. I kept wondering why the priest and all the, not the priest so much, but the vicar, when he came round, just said hello and walked and never stopped to speak to me. And they took the bandages off. They went up to say religion and the thing on the bottom of my bed, they put Hebrew. You know, and things like that. That was, you know, it was Australians, New Zealanders, Canadians, British, on this hospital.
But it was the Australians who were taking the
mickey. Yeah. They're practical jokers, isn't it? And, so after they'd taken the bandages off, the old specialist had a look at it, and he said, well, I got some of it out, but I couldn't get it all out. And I'm a bit worried about infection. And he said, I'll have somebody come and see you. He used to confer the Americans at that time had opened a hospital in Hiroshima when it was about 20 miles away. Because they were trying to find out, all of a sudden they were realising that people after the atom bomb were getting all this funny radiation stuff coming out, and they didn't know anything about it, did they? First time, you know. So they opened this high-tech hospital where they were treating Japanese people, and of course they were learning about it as well, weren't they? And because they had all the up-to-date equipment and everything there. But this, he wanted this American, I suppose, this day to confer with each other. To have a look at it, and he had a look at it, and he said, yeah, you could do it at his hospital, take it out. But they wouldn't, the CEO, we got the CEO of the hospital, and in the room, and he said, well, I can take it out, yeah, I can remove this. So he said, well, how much is that going to cost us? I forget how many dollars, he said, for the operation, and how much they charge a day for me being in the hospital. And then the CEO remembered I was sitting there, and he said, I don't think there's any need for you to be in there, Hoverson. So I was, and the next thing I knew, they said, well, no, you'll be going home. And the ice specialist said, yeah, you'll be going back to England. I can't do anything else here. I'm concerned some of this shrapnel has got to come out. It's more got to come out because I'm afraid of infection in both eyes. You know, spreading the other eye as well. And I think you better have a little rest on my Gemma before you go, which was a rest camp on an island. And I went there for a couple of weeks, and that was absolutely wonderful.
So, how did you feel about it? I'll come to the rescue, but how did you feel about the prospect? I mean, you must have thought you were going back to your unit at one point before the eye problem just got worse.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you have worried about going back? Had you had enough of
I didn't want to go back. I mean, that was a bit of relief to me when they said, you know, taking it in stages, saying, well, like when I was in hospital in the Seoul, and they said, well, we're moving you back to Kure in Japan. I mean, that in itself was a whoopee, you know. And then when they said, well, we're moving you back home, because I can't do anything else here. I ain't got the equipment to do anything else here.
So you were pleased?
Pleased to be out of it. More than pleased to be out of it. I'm going to tell you, more than pleased.
Now, where was this camp? This would be happening in June at Kure, I presume.
Yeah, June
and
time.
Where would you go to?
My Gemma, which is an island. There's an island, and on it was a hotel ran by the Australians, because the British couldn't run it so well without the discipline. It was ran by an Australian sergeant, and it was actually a hotel. We stayed in this hotel in this town. It was a religious island, very religious. It had all these floating shrines and all the little bridges over the rivers, and there was bodegas everywhere, and you know, and that was a religious island, and the Japanese used to visit it.
So did you enjoy yourself at my Gemma then?
That was absolutely wonderful. That was like heaven. Well, I went, there was a Marine from our ward, who was on the ward with me. We went together, and we had a little room on our own, and they used to make the beds, and the building was used mainly as a rest, you know, an hour and a half place for naval officers. And we used to, junior naval officers, but naval officers, and we used to eat with them and everything. Big polished tables and all the knives and forks lined up, and, you know, really good, really, really good food, good service all the time, and everything was done for us. And the Australian sergeant, who was sort of in charge of this place when we arrived, we went down a launch, and there's about 8 of us, I suppose, in the hospital, and he got us in this lounge, and he said, I don't really know what much about you. He said, I don't care what you do all day or all night as far as I'm concerned. He said, as long as you're in this lounge at 10 o'clock every morning, you can get yourself a beer and sit there so I can count heads. I just want to see the same number of heads every morning. I'm happy. What you do with yourself the rest of the day, all night, you please yourself. And that was really good. And
No trouble with the leg at all?
No, but then the leg had healed, you know. And
But the eye was still...
But the eye was still a problem. And
so this would be in June. Would it stretch into July, or...?
Well, the end part of June. The end part of June. Definitely.
So what happened next after my
general? My general, we then went back to the hospital. I was there for about a week, and waiting for a plane to go home. And then they said, right, you're on the plane tomorrow, going back to England. And I duly set off, still with my bits of uniform, part Canadian, part Australian, part British, all different bits and pieces. And that's all the gear I had. And off we went. And on the plane. When I got to the plane I met with Johnny Byfield again.
What state was he in?
He'd been in hospital in Tokyo. He'd opened his head up and closed it up by daring upright. He had a piece of shrapnel or a bullet or something lodging near the brain. They daren't touch it.
Had it affected him at all? I mean, when you were dragging him, helping him back and
no,
then...
He walked quite well on the way back. He walked very well on the way back. I suppose he walked as well as though he did. Yeah.
But he had this hole.
Yeah, his injury right there, you know. I thought, cool, you shouldn't be here. And he'd opened him up and he was bald, where he shaved his head in this hospital in Tokyo, opened his head up, looked at it and didn't touch it, and closed his head up again. Closed it all up again. And there was him and about four others of us who were up patients. The rest of them, the poor devils, who'd lost a leg, some back injuries, and we had a sergeant major from the Norfolks on there too.
So which
Sergeant
one?
Major Wilson, who'd got caught in one of these blinking spent minefields, and with the patrol, he'd taken the patrol out, and on the way back, somehow or the other got into this blinking spent minefield and realised it. And as he worked his way around the other end of the patrol to lead him back out, someone went up and he got all the shrapnel in his back, and he was on a special bed, they called it an A-frame, and he came all the way and he used to lie on his stomach for 4 hours, and then he used to clamp a bit on top of him and spin the thing over, and he laid on his back for 4 hours.
That was Company Sergeant Major Wilson?
Wilson, yep. The chap come from North Norfolk. His wife was running the post office, I understand, so I found out later. But I mean, I don't really see people like that, because I fell a bit down and I thought, cure, I lost I lost the sight of an eye and all that sort of thing. And I'm thinking...
Had your sight gone from your eye?
Not then? Completely then, but they did say, you know, I probably would go. Because although I could see a bit, when you get an injury to your eye like that, you got a cataract that goes over the eye. And, of course, they couldn't do anything about cataracts in them days. Not like now, when they just whip the lens out and put a plastic lens in. There was none of that. I mean, that was more like hammer and chisel surgery, as always surgery is today. And, yeah.
So you were pretty fed up at the thought that it's your right eye, isn't it?
Yeah, and I thought, well, yeah, well, you're barely young, but you know. But I felt good in as far as that my eye looked all right, and I was hoping they would go to be able to save the eye itself, you see. So, anyway, we set off on this plane. We flew the first day from from Curry, Ryan Curry somewhere, not far from there, and into Manila in the Philippines. And that was the first phase. We stopped there overnight, went into an American hospital. They were all ready for us and took us into this American hospital. They had a ward set aside specially for that purpose. We spent the night in Manila and set off again the next day. We were in RAF Hastings. I mean, the dead couldn't fly for too many hours a day because people needing treatment and that sort of thing, you see. Some of them in a very bad way. And we flew the next day to Changi, Singapore, where we stayed for a week because it was an Australian plane and crew, Royal Australian Air Force plane and crew, which took us as far as Changi. And then we then had to wait for a British plane and crew to take us from Changi back to the UK. And so we were there about a week, which was great for me. I mean, I and us hot patients, I mean, the ladies from the WVS used to come and pick us up, and they really looked after us well. Everywhere we stayed, we looked after very well. And they made a fuss out of us and, you know, took us on for tea and cucumber sandwiches. That sort of thing. But that was quite nice. Anyway, or we'd have a wander around the town on our own. We then went from Changi, after about a week, we went from Changi to Colombo, as it was then, a place called Magumbo, an RAF base there. Had a night there, and then flew up to Karachi in Pakistan, and had a night there. And from there we went to Habania, in Iraq, about 20 miles from Baghdad. And when we landed there, the rear wheel of the plane busted. And that place where the, God, the old people lived there, I don't know. I mean, that was built on the oasis in the desert. And the heat was colossal. That was, oh dear, I know it was a different type of heat, but it was, said we'd been in Singapore a couple of days before, 50 miles north of the equator, but that place was, God, so hot, you couldn't believe it. And anyway, we had a week there, and we were on the edge of this sort of camp. We used to sort of go, sit there in bed in the morning, you see these Arabs coming across the desert with their camels. But we couldn't get anybody to take us into Baghdad, the ones who'd get up, like us up patients, we tried to get someone to take us into Baghdad, well, it was only 20 miles away, but nobody dare risk it across the desert road. They wouldn't do it. And that was too hot. That was then end part of July. And eventually, after about a week, we left there and flew to Malta, RAF base in Malta, which we had then, had a night there, and then back to Lynham in Wiltshire, RAF Lynham in Wiltshire, and landed on August the 1st, exactly a year after I left Liverpool, which was August the 1st. It was a bank holiday weekend. Spent a night in an RAF. I think we spent a night in an RAF hospital at Lynham. And then the army came and picked us up the next day. And we went to Aldershot. I try and remember the name, a very old, old hospital. Had the longest corridor any hospital in the world. That was about a quarter of a mile long. I think you looked down it and you couldn't hardly see the end. Huge thing.
Hugely.
Huge, big.
Oh, sorry.
Did you know the name? Long, of... very, very long.
Oh, yeah. I misheard that. What hospital was it? Do you know the name?
I keep trying to remember the name of it. Gun Hospital or something. Or on Gun Hill or something in Aldershot.
But an Aldershot anyway.
Yeah, that was an old, very old military hospital. But I was in the eye infirmary at the back wear the boot a bit, little bit on the back, and I was in the old infirmary there. And where they kept looking at me eye, and they couldn't make up their minds what to do. They were trying to get these pieces of shrapnel out by using an electric magnet, trying to get these pieces of shrapnel out through the same holes they went in without having to cut the eye open. They said if I, that might help to keep a bit of vision in it if they didn't have to cut the eye open again. And they kept messing about with it, and this went on and on. And in fact, one morning they said to me, one day they were going to do it. And I had a pre-med, went into the, you know, this pre-med injection they gave, used to give in those days before you had anaesthetic, which sort of made you on cloud seven. And went into that, into the theatre, and I used to sort of walk with myself lay on the table, and he looked at it and he said, I still don't know whether to cut it open again. He said, I mean, are you any leave since you've been home? I say no. He said, well, you better go home for a week and come back. So what do you mean? He said, have a week's leave and come back, and then perhaps we can decide what to do. And I probably knew where I was on the plane, on the train. They'd give me a railway warrant and a few quid, and I was on my way home, which was the first time at home after coming from abroad. I'd come home for about a week, I think.
How did you feel getting back after
on the way home, I mean, I was wandering about, and I was still had the effect of this pre-med. The funny part about it was I walked back in this ward, and the sister said, what are you doing? We walking about for, and I told her, oh, she say. And I just got dressed, and they made out a railway warrant and gave me some money, and I got on the train, and well, that was great to be back home, you know. Back home. I don't know, it was a week or a fortnight, I can't remember. Anyway, I came home. I believe it was 2 weeks. I had a couple of weeks at home, and that was.
I should have asked earlier, did you get letters and parcels while you were in Korea from home?
I used to get letters. Yeah, and parcels, yep. Yeah.
And what were they important to you?
Yes, I think they are to all soldiers, really, aren't they? You know, I mean, I didn't have a girlfriend or a wife or a girlfriend, you know, but that was still nice to hear from mother and father.
What
and,
would they write about?
Sisters and, well, things what had happened at home, really. You know, I used to get these little email things, what you folded up and stuck together, didn't you?
And what would you write back to them, or would you write back?
I'd write back to them, yeah. Yeah, I'd write back to them and just saying everything's all right and, don't, you know, we're getting on okay and don't
Did
worry.
Did you tell them much about what was happening? Or?
No. No. Never told them anything.
And what would be in the parcels?
Well, you didn't get much in the way of parcels, really, because you couldn't get much in the way of food because you were, that was very difficult for them. I mean, a woman things took about 6 weeks to get there. You know, it's very difficult for them to send you anything. And you didn't get much in the way of parcels, but you got letters regularly, you know, got mail regularly.